Her father and Bertol were stooped over a tray of bedding plants with one of the gardeners. Her new clarity of vision noticed every detail of the plants, the notched petals of fire orange and sun yellow, the lace-cut leaves. The gardener's dirt-blackened fingernails, where his hands were splayed out on the potting table. The red flush along the sides of her uncle's neck. White lines in the skin of her father's face, where he had squinted against the sun so long that the creases had not tanned. A loose thread on Bertol's sleeve button. Her foot scraped on the tile floor because she let it. Her father looked up.
Esmea, come see the new hybrids. I think they'll do very well in the front urns. I hope old Sebastian didn't wear you out.
He didn't. In fact, I found him quite interesting.
Is something wrong, Esme?
I need to talk to you, Father. Perhaps in your study?
Something serious?
Only if you consider a matter of family honor serious.
The gardener's hands jerked. The plants shivered. The gardener reached for the box of planters. Her father lifted his chin, and the man grabbed the box and scuttled away, out the back door of the conservatory.
Do you want me to leave?
Please.
Bertol flinched, his eyes shifting to her father, then back to her.
Esme, what?
You will know soon enough, but I would prefer to speak to Father alone just now.
Bertol flushed, but turned away.
Well, Esmea, there was no need to be rude.
The little muscles around his eyes and nose were tense. The contrast between his tanned skin and the untanned creases had almost disappeared. He should be able to put the sum together. She wondered if he would.
I talked to Seb Coron, or rather, he talked, and I found it most interesting.
Oh?
You lied to me. You said it was all a dream, that it didn't happen.
For a moment, Esme thought he would try to pretend he didn't understand. But then a quick wash of color rose to his cheeks and drained again.
We did it for you, Esmea.
No, not for me. For the family, maybe, but not for me.
For more than you, I admit. For the others, it was better that one child suffer that confusion.
Confusion? You call that confusion?
Esme's body ached with remembered pain, the specific pains that had specific causes. She had tried to scream. She had tried to fight him off. She had even tried to bite. The strong adult hands, hardened by war, had held her down easily, bruising her.
No, not the injuries. But not being sure what had happened. You couldn't tell us who, Esmea. You didn't really see him. And they said you would forget.
I saw him. I don't know his name, but I saw him.
You couldn't give us any details at the time. You were exhausted, terrified. You probably didn't even see his face. You've been in combat now as an adult. You know how confusing it is.
Show me the regimental roster. Show me, and I'll point him out.
You can't possibly, after all these years.
Sebastian says he killed him. That means you know who it is. If I can point him out, that should prove to you that I do remember.
You can't possibly.
But he led the way to his study without another word. He moved to the console and stabbed at the controls. Esme noticed that his fingers were shaking. She felt a calm satisfaction. Then he stepped back, and she came forward to look. The faces came up, six to a screen. She stared at them, one part of her mind sure that she would know, and another sure that she wouldn't. Had her father even called up the right year? He wanted her to fail, that was clear enough. He might have cheated, but she could not believe that of him, even now. Suiza's did not lie, and he was her father. He had lied before, because he was her father. She tore her mind away from that dilemma and stared at the screen. Esme did not recognize most of the faces at all. She had no reason to. She had not been to Boo Hollow Barracks after her father was posted there. She found a few faces, vaguely familiar, but unthreatening. They would have been men who had served with her father before, even among the household guard at the Estancia. Among them, a much younger Sebastian Coron, whom she recognized instantly. So her memory was clear in some details that far back. She did not look at her father as she scrolled through the list. It was hard enough to focus on the screen, to breathe through the tightness in her throat. Screen after screen. She heard her father shift in his chair, but he did not interrupt. Someone came to the door. She heard the rustle of clothing, but did not look up. Her father must have gestured, for without a word, she heard the rustle of clothing retreat. Through the entire enlisted ranks, and she had not found that face her mind refused to show her. Doubts chilled her. Surely Caron would have told her if it had been someone in another unit, or an officer.
Would he?
Esme made herself keep going, to the officer ranks. There at the head was her father, no gray in his hair, his mouth one long, firm line. Beneath, in descending order, the other officers. Esme's heart fluttered, then raced thunderously in her chest, spurred by the old fear. He stared out of the page, sleek and handsome, the honey-colored hair swept back. She remembered it darker, matted with sweat and dirt. But no doubt at all, not one. She knew his name. She knew his family. She had danced with his younger brothers at the Harvest Games, the year before she left Altiplano for the Stars. Her mouth was too dry to speak. She struggled to swallow, to clear her tongue. She had struggled then, too.
This.
She laid her finger on the image, surprised at the steadiness of her hand. Her finger didn't tremble at all. Her father got up. She could hear him coming up behind her and fought not to flinch away.
Oh, gods. You did. How did you?
I told you. I remember.
Esmea.
It was a plea, and his hand on her hair was another. She slid aside from it, pushing herself away from the console, scrambling out of the chair.
I didn't know his name. I was too young to have been introduced, even if he'd been at our house before. I couldn't tell you his name or give the kind of description that an adult might have been able to give, but I knew. You did not show me the roles then, did you?
Her father's face, when she looked, might have been carven in bleached wood. It looked dry and stiff, unnatural. Was that her vision or his reality? Her gaze wandered away around the room, just noticing the familiar things before moving on to something else.
Esmea, I'm sorry. If, since you remember, you probably need therapy.
Therapy? Here? Here where the therapist told me it was all my imagination, all fever dreams?
I'm sorry.
She knew that tone. He could apologize, but that was supposed to be the end of it. She was supposed to accept the apology and let it go. Not this time. Not again.
We made a mistake, Esmea. We can't change that now. It's past. I can't possibly convince you how badly I feel about it. That it was a mistake. But there were reasons. I asked advice.
Don't make excuses. I'm not stupid. I can see what you would like to call the realities. He was an officer, the son of a friend. There was a civil war in progress. You could not risk a feud.
Memory reminded Esme that the young man's father had commanded a sizable force himself. Not merely a feud, but potentially a lost war. Her military training argued that a child's pain, even her pain, weighed less than an entire campaign. But the child she had been, the child whose pain still shaped her reactions, the child whose witness had been denied, refused that easy answer. She squeezed her eyes shut, trying to force back all the feelings that wanted to escape, shut them back into the darkness.
It did not take rejuvenation to make you prudent.
You need help, Esmea.
Probably I do. But not here. Not now.
You won't come back again, will you?
I don't know. Probably not, but you might as well know. I worked out a deal with Lucy for the herd.
Good. I shouldn't have done that, but I suppose I was still hoping you'd come home for good, especially when they treated you like that.
And you treated me better?
I understand.
He didn't, but she wasn't going to argue, not now. Now she wanted to get away, far away, and have some time alone. She suspected she would have to spend some time with Fleet psych nannies in the end, but not now.
Please, Esmea, Get help in your fleet if you won't accept it here.
I'm going to ride out to the valley. Just for a day. Tomorrow. I don't want company.
I understand.
No surveillance.
Esme met his gaze squarely. He blinked first.
No surveillance. But if you stay overnight, please let us know.
Of course.
Esme walked out into the afternoon, feeling nothing but a great light emptiness, as if she were a seed pod at summer's end, ready to blow away on the first autumn storm wind. Across the gravel drive, between the beds of flowers whose color hurt her eyes, across the sunlit fields beyond, where the shadows shifted and moved and called her name, but she did not answer. She came back when the sun fell behind the distant mountains, tired in ways that had nothing to do with walking, however far she'd walked, and went into the dim entrance hall, where the smell of food and clatter of dishes stopped her short.
Dama?
Esme whirled, but it was one of the servants, offering a tray with a cup and a folded note. She shook her head to the cup of tea, took the note, and went upstairs. No one followed, no one intruded. The note, as she'd half expected, was from her great-grandmother.
Your father told me I am now free to talk to you. Come see me.
Esme put the note on the shelf above the clothes pole and thought about it. She had always assumed that her father obeyed his grandmother as she obeyed her grandfather. Though men and women had different roles, elders always ruled. She had thought so anyway, imagining the chain of authority coming down link by link from eldest to youngest through all the generations. Esme lay back on the bed, and as the hours passed, she could not find the strength to move, to get up and bathe or change her clothes or even turn away from the square of sky she could see darkening from blue to gray to the star-spangled midnight. It was all she could do to blink her eyes when they burned from staring at the window. It was all she could do to breathe. In the first light of dawn, she struggled up, stiff and miserable. How many mornings had she wakened stiff and miserable, hoping to see no one on the way to the baths, on the way out? And here she was again, supposedly a hero. She would have laughed at the thought if she could. Once more alone at the top of her father's house, once more awake and miserable after a sleepless night.
Get a grip.
A deep breath of the morning air, sweet-scented with the night-blooming flowers on the house wall.